It's time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 28th of May 2011. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It comes to you every morning from 10 to 12, with the interviews repeated Wednesdays at 7 o'clock and Thursdays at 12:30pm. On Saturday the 28th of May, Emma Boa Warner talked to James the Gardener. She spoke to a group of health workers visiting the island from Vanuatu, and she talked to Rhiannon from Waiheke Library.
Anyway, so I'd just like to welcome James the Gardener to Island Life this month.
Good morning, Emma.
How are you?
All right, all the way over there.
All the way, I know. Well, we're in the new studio for, I was going to say for those of you that can't see us, but obviously that'd be everybody. And instead of us cuddling up side by side, as I know, it's quite cosy on a Saturday morning, that we're now opposite each other, so we can stare into each other's eyes, which is always fun.
Yep.
Excuse me. So have you had a good morning, James?
I've had a very busy morning. I've just been over in Onitangi doing some pruning.
Pruning? Well, what were you pruning?
I was pruning an olive tree today.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Or four.
Four.
So, yeah, no, that went really well.
Good. Okay, so let's crack on. What are we going to talk about this month?
Well, I think we've missed a month, haven't we? So what I thought I'd do today is have a little talk about May and June together.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Yep, that's great.
Yeah, because pretty much May and June are very much the same.
Sure.
There's a few differences, but not many. And then, of course, we've got Plant of the Month.
Yay! So, Plant of the Month! Woohoo! Okay, great.
Yeah. So looking forward to that.
Yes, I can't wait. I can't wait. Okay, well, let's get cracking then.
Okay, well, I mean, really with May... Oh, the microphone, I can't see my notes. Okay.
You just need to put your mouth right, hold them up like that. That's
right. Okay, over there and then to the right. Yes.
No, hold them wherever you like, but just make sure you're talking into the mic.
At a distance.
Yes, that's fine.
Right. Okay. No, well, I was thinking about May and looking at if you are in the garden and you're thinking, well, gosh, you know, I need to do some moving around and redesigning, I think this is the time of year to do it. Of course, you could probably... leave it a little bit later in the year, but this is sort of the ideal time because everything's slowing down. Although it has been the hottest, or it should be after the next couple of days, the results are out, that it'll be the hottest May in a very, very long time. So,
it has been warm, hasn't it? It's kind of, I mean, it'd be different for you because you work outdoors and stuff, but for me, I'm like, I haven't known what to put on in the morning because sometimes it's been so warm. That if I put any layers on or anything, I've been absolutely boiling. And other times I've just been very wet and soggy.
Yeah.
Like the other day, Thursday, I was very wet and soggy twice. I got caught.
Mm. Well, definitely muggy at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah.
And all those clothes you think you should be wearing in the morning.
Too warm.
Yeah, you sort of unravel during the morning, don't you? And
yes.
Then you end up with clothes that you probably wear in the summer.
Yeah.
So you're probably still in jandals, I imagine, most of you, in the garden, except if you're doing digging, of course. But what I was thinking was you can still do those sort of wintry type tasks, like the if you've got perennial borders, so you've got plants that come up in the spring and summer and do a lovely dance for you and then die away in the winter. Now's a good time to be, you know, cutting them back. Or definitely this month was ideal, and of course in June too you could be doing it as well. And one of the things you could put on your list is the dividing and splitting up of certain perennials, and even things like daylilies.
Which
people seem to like, and they're a lot of work, but they're the sort of plants that you could actually divide up quite happily at this time of year, and as long as you give them a bit of a haircut once you've divided them and transplant them, then it'll work really well.
So what's the best way to divide plants?
Well, if you've got a large plant, a large clumping plant, so lots of different elements to the plant, if you pull it out and you see that there's lots of different sections to it, then what you can do to it is take to it with, if it's a large specimen, you could take to it with a spade. You can be quite brutal, actually. You don't have to be too gentle with it. And then there are smaller plants, too, that you can just divide with either a sharp knife or... But with regards to doing that, once you've actually split them up, then it's really just a question of replanting them soon. Keeping in mind that the roots need to be moist. I think that's the trick. If you pull them out of the ground, divide them and leave them, then you'll find that they and the roots dry out, then you'll find that they're just they tend to die. Well, that's the worst case scenario, but they just tend to struggle more often. But really, there's a term called healing in.
Healing in.
Healing in. And healing in is basically not planting, but just almost covering the plant roots with soil or compost or potting mix, and just keeping those roots in the ground, but not planted. And that's a really good way of if you haven't made the decision yet on where you're going to transplant your perennials or e.g. lilies, you could actually hold off a bit. So I mean, that's a big task in May and in June. And the other things you could still be, I mean, with the growing season, you could still be trimming some of the hedges if you haven't.
I was going to ask you about that, because we have well, it's not a hedge, but it's a triffid plant at the bottom of our garden that's that when we bought the house 5 years ago, and I may have mentioned it to you before, it was a small little thing that was on next door neighbours that I'm just going along the wire fence.
Mm-hmm.
It's now coming up the garden, ready to suck into it and eat us up, I feel. Mm. So would now be the right time to prune that back?
Yeah, well, I mean, now's the time to do your pruning, and if you've got something that looks like a hedge but it may be a triffid, then, you know, you could probably take to that as well. I mean, you can be very brutal with some plants. I mean, as long as you're not standing all over them, you know, and you're making quite, you know, cuts with judgment, I like to call them, and then you
sort of judgment.
And you're thinking of what's going to happen in the spring. So
right, okay.
Wherever you cut something, in theory, it's going to sprout. So if, say, for example, you have a plant that you want to be able, say an apple tree, and you want to be able to pick your apples rather than climb a ladder and on a hill and fall off, then, you know, it's a good idea to just reduce the size down. And that's just pruning for practical reasons,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, absolutely.
Functional. Because the trees, you know, ultimately the tree is for your enjoyment, not necessarily sometimes for it to grow to a certain height, which is unmanageable. And a lot of trees are like that on the island. A lot of plum trees, you see those really old plum trees with, and they just haven't had any pruning for years and years, and they look like this quite a dangerous sort of thing. They've got all these sprouts at the bottom of it, and you can't actually get to the main trunk of it. And there are, you know, it's just so long and full of lichen and what have you that, you know, you just need to. Sometimes they are so old that it is a little bit too late. But, you know, you can, you know, definitely get into pruning for your own, you know, for the height.
Sure, sure. Okay.
And of course, there's the other reasons to prune as well, the disease, and you know, if you've got something called dieback on your plant, where it's starting to look a little bit twiggy at one end, where there's green growth at the other, then that's a really good you know, sign of, you know, trimming back. And the other thing too with pruning in these months as well is it's a really good idea to paint your wounds of your pruning. Especially if it's a large pruning, you can paint it with something called Seal and Heal, or you know, or there's many different types. But what you're trying to do is seal the wound with a sort of a paint mixture, and that will hopefully stop any bugs. You know, a fresh cut really could invite bugs to come in, and
of course,
like borer, you know, and those sorts of things. So it's certainly a good idea to do that.
Okay, that's great.
So some of the other things too, like looking more at June now, it's going to get wet and miserable. You know, you could be thinking more about... I know I've had a look at my tool shed lately, and you know, it's certainly not in alphabetical order anymore, or never it was.
I was about to say, was it ever, James?
It's interesting. Like, your tool shed is like a garden tool shed. It's like walking into a it's just like walking into a minefield, really. You know, as soon as you move your rake, then something else will fall down on top of you. So at least twice a year I try and. Cut a track through my my shed so I can actually get in and out without tripping on anything. Or so basically, if you are working for somebody and you've got lots of tools and what have you, you need to do a stock take. This is a good time of the year to do it, and to sharpen your tools as well. It's a huge difference you'll find if you're dividing up plants or digging a hole if you just sharpen your spade. And if you clean your equipment too. What I mean by that is actually taking all the clay off your tools, hosing them down, you actually stop them rusting. Because a lot of people buy tools from some of the bigger wholesale hardware stores, and a lot of the tools won't last that long because they're not like the built, you know, the good old Atlas.
But
there are sort of some tools out there that just need a bit more TLC than others. So that's a good time of year to do it. Walking around your wet, soggy garden at the moment is not a very good idea. Because the more walking, I call it the cow effect. So you know, the more walking around your garden you do, whatever you're trying to do, try and keep off your garden beds at the moment if you don't need to weed them. You've mulched them. There's not much point in sort of walking all over them if you can help it, because the like cows that walk on muddy paddocks, they tend to ruin the structure of the soil.
Got you.
And they actually compact the soil as well. So in later months when the water's trying to get in, you know, it's going to be a lot harder. Your soil won't be aerated.
Ah, yeah, of course. Right, okay.
So you've got to just think sort of about those, you know, are there tasks that you can leave until it's dry? Then I probably would. And with regards to drainage as well, like, it's the best time of year to see where your duck ponds are. If you, you know, for instance, if you're in Blackpool, you know, and you've got a duck pond and the one you don't want, and you want to do a little bit of drainage, it'd be a good idea to get somebody around to have a look at your drainage and see if you can, you know, lower your water table. You know,
because that is a real problem for some properties on the island, and probably with the whole climate change and larger sort of weather events that we're having, is going to become more and more of an issue.
I think the weather is weird, isn't it? I
mean, it is weird. It's a good way of putting it.
Lots of things are going on at the moment. I mean, not just on the island, but all around us. You know,
globally,
I mean,
as well. Yeah.
You know, I think there is definitely. You know, something afoot, isn't there? You know, in terms of a gradual change, anyway. And being so warm as well. I mean, this is, I mean, you, I don't know. And since, you know, in my lifetime, you know, you sort of think, you know, well, gosh, you know, it is a bit warmer, you know, maybe. But, and sorry, with June as well, you know, you can think about looking at. And you'll be quite glad if you did this earlier in the year, planting winter annuals, because of the colour. Yeah, because there's something that does happen in June. If you're planting a little earlier on the year, you'll probably start to see the poppies and the snapdragons and your stock and your sweet peas. These are sort of really sort of plants that you can plant one year or seed, drop some seeds in, and then they keep coming back year after year. And they just give your garden a really nice... something extra when everything else is sort of looking a bit sleepy.
Right. Okay.
So there's a few. It's a bit sort of quiet in June and May for June, but I mean, there's certainly, if you're getting into things like you can plant garlic.
Oh, okay. Is that another good time for garlic? Is it?
Yeah. Well, some people say the shortest day.
That's right.
That sort of rule. I don't think that's absolutely the rule. You can go a little bit before, maybe. And in June, you know, I mean, people use a lot of garlic now, don't they? And or more so than they probably used to. Mm. So, I mean, it would be a very good idea just to plant out, you know, one bulb is like $5 and yep. you can split up all the cloves and you plant them at about 30 millimetres apart and then maybe 50 millimetres deep. And then in 2 weeks you'll see some little shoots. And
wow.
Some people are better at growing garlic than others.
Right.
But, I mean, as long as you prepare the soil, you can give it a lot of lime and a lot of compost and then dress it with compost to finish and make sure that the clove is sticking
pointing up. Yeah, I know.
The right direction.
Don't look at me.
You know, you'll certainly be... I mean, it's fun, isn't it? Because,
yeah,
you
definitely.
Know, and you're not going to the supermarket and rummaging through all those... garlics from overseas. It'd be nice using your own stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm. Well, I think we need to move on to plant of the month.
Oh yes, no. Well, plant of the month is actually. And now I'm thinking about. Since this morning, I thought, well, why not the olive tree?
Okay.
The olive tree.
Yeah.
Now, I've been doing a little bit of reading about olives, and I mean, if you want the botanical name, it's quite an easy one. This one, it's Olea europaea.
Olea europaea.
Mm. So that's an easy one.
It is. It's easier than some of the ones you've tried to get me to say. Thanks. Mm. Yes.
And I mean, olives are quite versatile aesthetically, and of course, you can actually for produce as well.
Sure.
But I mean, you can't go wrong with an olive tree. I mean, if you plant it as a hedge, you could be very successful on the island here with as a hedge.
Oh.
It gives off a bit of a Mediterranean feel. Very drought tolerant. And if you want to start again, you can just cut it in half, almost down to halfway down the larger piece of the trunk, and it will sprout again.
Oh, really? Mm. Gosh, I didn't know it was that hardy.
Yeah, oh, it's super hardy. So as long as you can see some nodules on the side of the tree that obviously are going to be what's coming out. Make sure you paint the wounds, that sort of thing. I mean, that's a tree that, I've seen footage in Spain of people taking to them with chainsaws. And
really?
Yeah, just taking the whole thing.
Oh, they're tough in Spain.
Oh, they are, yes. Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, so olive trees, I mean, they're certainly, one to use. If you're thinking of using them for food or for looks.
Cool. Mm. Okay, well, thank you very much, James.
Thank you.
That's excellent. So, plant of the month is the olive tree. And can we call it... Yes, of course we can call it a plant. I was just having a little moment there. Yes, of course.
Yes, yes.
Duh. Yes, just having a little Homer moment
big,
there.
Big plant.
A big plant, yes. Okay, well, thanks very much for coming in. And
no problem.
I know you've had a busy day and you've got plenty more busy days ahead of you for the next few weeks and stuff. So thanks very much for taking time to come in. And I would like to welcome some very, very special guests into the show today. And there are some health workers from different parts of Vanuatu. So, hello, guys.
Hi.
Hello. Oh, you're going to have to be much louder. Hello.
Hello.
That's better. So, right, let's do a little bit of introductions about who you are and why you're here. So, this is the first time for all of you in New Zealand?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes? Yep. Yeah. You're going to have to speak a lot louder and come closer to the microphones. That's great. Cuddle up close, guys. That's great, ladies. So, so you're from different parts of Vanuatu, and it's your first time in New Zealand. So you're here for 5 weeks, is it?
Six weeks.
Yeah. Ah, my notes are wrong then. Sorry about that. And you're here for what? What are you here for? Yep, that's great.
Close.
I can't hear you. You're going to have to come right up to the microphone. Put the microphone right there. That's good. Great. That's okay. You go.
We are here in a short term training.
Great. You're here for training. That's fantastic. So I'll just introduce you all as well. So we've got Russell, who is a senior dental therapist, and you're from Dental Clinic Villa Central.
Yes, yes.
And so how long have you been doing that kind of work?
Oh, a long time back, 1989.
You need to speak.
I have been doing this work for 21 years.
You don't look old enough, sir.
Well, I started very young.
Oh, very young. Yes, yes. Well, you're still in short trousers. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And we have Mrs. Rinny Morrison. Hello, Rinny. And you're an aid post and village health worker from, let me just check that I pronounce this correctly. Tell me if I don't. Lamon Bay,
yes.
From Epi Island.
Yes.
Yes. And so how long have you been doing that kind of work?
Only 2 years.
2 years. So it's something quite new for you, is it?
Yeah.
Are you enjoying it?
Yes.
Excellent. Okay, and then we have Mrs. Grinethi. Now then, I'm going to double check, because I checked your first names, didn't I? But I forgot about your surnames. Tavonwa? Is that correct? Did I pronounce? Tell me if I didn't get that right. Okay. And you're a health promotion worker from Norsup Hospital.
Yes.
Yeah, and have you been doing that kind of thing for some time?
I've been in the post for at least over 10 years.
Right, okay. Joe, we have a health promotion officer. Joe Jimmy, hi.
Yes, yes.
Oh, that's nice and clear, thank you. So you're from Toba Province.
That's right. I did work back in Vanuatu, in Torba, one of the provinces in Vanuatu, which is known as Torba.
Torba, lovely. Torba. And last but definitely not least, you're going to have to go ahead and come over to the boys' microphone. So, Mr. Manuel Lentil, and you're a public health nurse, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm a public health nurse.
You're a what, sorry?
I'm a public health nurse.
A public health nurse. And how long have you been doing that kind of work?
I've been doing this the public health nurse for about 8 years.
8 years. Oh, yeah. Okay. So that's good. Excellent. Well, what I wanted to ask you is what I think we'll do actually is that microphone isn't picking up very well, ladies. So we'll all use this first microphone. So we might have to move around a bit, but that's absolutely fine. It's all very relaxed. So what is it that you actually do over there? So we've gone through your jobs, but do you work in big or little places, or is there a real mixture? Yep, just step forward, and that's great.
I work in the dental department, oral health promotion in Vanuatu, covering two of the main provinces in Vanuatu. That's in Port Vila and Tavea provinces. We do mainly promotion, oral health promotion. We do community visits and and clinical stuff as we do every
right,
day.
Right. Okay. So you all work within the health sector in slightly different areas. Is that right, Rennie? Yes? Yes. Come forward.
Yes.
Okay. So tell me a little bit. Stay by the microphone. That's lovely. Tell me a little bit about what kind of problems there are in Vanuatu so that people in New Zealand can understand. That's okay. Take your time.
Some of the problems back in Vanuatu are non-communicable disease.
Right.
And respiratory problems.
Yep.
Yeah.
What about...
The main disease that I used to see. And
yep.
Maybe the other friends, they've seen a lot more than me.
Possibly, yes, possibly. So do you have any other things that you'd like to add there of any of the other issues that Vanuatu has?
Okay, thank you. Back in the clinic where I work,
yes.
Yeah, most of the problems or disease that people come to the clinic, one of my friends have already mentioned the NCD, people with... diabetic or sugar.
Mm.
The other one is hypertensive problems. And also he mentioned the respiratory. Even in the clinic where I work, we often see all sorts of problems like mother. Men problems, women problems, they came for antenatal care or deliveries in the clinics.
Ah, for mothers.
Yeah,
mothers. Yep,
and
gotcha.
Most of the, sometimes we often see STI. Like people that came in for STI infection. Gonorrhea, syphilis.
STD. Sorry, I was thinking. STD.
Yeah.
Thank you for
most of the time we often go out in the clinics, go out in the communities,
right?
To public awareness.
Yep.
To educate people.
So you do lots of education work as well. Very good.
Yeah.
Okay, lovely. Thank you. So, tell me what's... So we've talked about some of the problems for Vanuatu. Tell me about some of the things that are really positive. What's great about Vanuatu? You're going to have to come up to the mic there. That's lovely.
Okay, thank you so much. We are addressing the problems mentioned by my colleagues. We have strategies plans in place to address all the public health problems as mentioned, like NCDs and sexually transmitted infections.
Right.
HIV AIDS prevention programs. We have all these plans in place, and every other people are implementing the programs in their own provinces.
Great. So we were talking before, just a moment ago, about some of the education programs. Are you involved with some of those public awareness and education programs?
Yeah, we have those in place, the public education programs. And we also do the events, health events, world events, like World AIDS Day and yes. World Diabetic Days, World Blood Donor Days. We are part of those programs. So we address those issues during all these public awareness programs using PA systems and public
great.
Talks.
Great. Mm-hmm. So when you go out and do the talks, are they just for, are they for school children or are they for adults as well? Is it a mixture of, are you there to educate everybody or do you focus on any particular area?
Their target groups, like the youth, we address the STIs yep. with the youth groups, and we address the women health issues like cervical screening and other things with women. And we are also encouraging male involved men in family planning and reproductive health.
Ah, very
things.
Good. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's great. Thank you. So we've talked about some of the issues in Vanuatu. So what about the course that you're here to undertake and that you're doing? What are you learning on the course?
Okay, thank you. Apart from most of our programs we contacted in Vanuatu, we are pretty much coming here to on-the-job training. This is to assist us with the program management, how you plan your programs in the communities to deliver HIV program, World Tobacco program. It's part of our implementation program back in Vanuatu where we came here to management program. And of course, apart from that, we assist our program through evaluation. How you do a very good program and managing the program back at the community settings.
Excellent, excellent. So where have you been going? Where have you visited so far?
Since we arrived here in New Zealand, we stayed at Auckland City. So we've been doing our study back in Population Problem Gambling Foundation with Mr. John and Eliano. They pretty much have been helping us a lot with this program because part of our program back in Vanuatu, they assist us a lot with all this stuff of management.
Right.
And we've been visiting some of the places in Auckland, like Tongan community.
Oh, have someone, you? Excellent.
Yeah.
I bet that was interesting.
As far as Auckland, we went to visit Hamilton.
Oh, you've been to Hamilton?
Yeah, to visit some of our Pacific Islands group there. To see their programs, how they do their programs back in Hamilton.
Right.
This will help us a lot in the community area.
Yeah.
And of course, we have this chance of visiting Waiheke. Which it has been very pleasant place, and we enjoyed because apart from that, we came out here to do our part of our training. We come out here to speak out with our people here through radio.
Lovely.
Program here.
Thank you.
We enjoy staying here in Waiheke.
You're enjoying it. Okay. Now there's somebody laughing there in the background. Come on up, sir. Come on up. Let's talk a little bit about what is it that you're... Just turn the microphone to you. That's lovely. So what is it that you're going to be doing at Waiheke?
Okay, what we're doing here, this morning we have a visit to the community garden.
Ah,
where,
yes.
So the a lady was explaining to us how to, you know, utilize the and use the compost to grow gardens, and it's more economical when we do at the back of our gardens.
Yes.
Whereas back home we don't have that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have big gardens in the bush.
Yes.
But we don't have it around our houses. We got big trees around our houses, like mango trees, where, you know, we didn't have the small gardens to benefit from those gardens, but we learned so much here about those gardens. And one of the things we learned this morning is how we put how what we learned for the past 4 weeks, we have come to learn the practical part of it in the garden,
okay.
How they manage the garden and benefited out of the garden.
Excellent, thank you. So don't rush off. I'm having a little dance done for me now. This is great. You guys can stay all day. Sorry? Oh, okay, great. Well, we'll finish off with a song as well at the end. But what I wanted to ask you is some of the stuff that you're learning on the course, how do you feel you're going to apply that when you get back home?
Yeah, some of the problems we faced back home, and the problems are there.
Yeah.
But in our cultures, we just have to accept to live with it. Whereas here, they have special places and programs to look after those people.
Yes.
For instance, those who have problems with mental problems.
Mental health issues,
mental health problems, issues. They have been allocated to some special places where they can be looked after, or those who have problems with drugs.
Yes.
Whereas back home, we just live with it.
Right.
We don't identify them as a problem, a need.
Ah, okay. Do you think that's something that you would like to introduce then, where possible?
Oh, yeah. When we get back home, we're going to try and use...
You're going to sort the place out, you guys. Yeah. You're going to whip it into shape. Okay. All right, then. So that's really interesting. Thank you very much. What do you think of Waiheke so far? You've got a fun packed day, haven't you? All of you. Yep.
Waiheke is a very beautiful place, and it's like our town back in Port Vila.
Ah, fantastic. Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
The fresh air we breathe, and the people are very nice, and the market is like ours, and... Yeah, everything is beautiful about Waiheke. And we came on the ferry, it's so beautiful. It's a very good ride.
You're very lucky you've got sunshine today as well. We've had a little bit of rain in the last couple of weeks, so that's great. So I'd like to invite you to all gather around the microphone and sing. This is a lovely surprise. Is this something you've written specially for me, is it? Yeah? Yeah, that's great. For Waiheke Radio. So you're going to all come close to the mic.
Hem mi time na you become one place, all same one nation, one family. Sake mat all differences, may you meet joy in long unity. Hem mi time na you become one place, all same one nation, one family. Sake mat all differences, there you me join long unity. You me build him up Pacific Islands, where them love more unity. You me family, you me one, you me only Pacific Islands. Long Vanuatu, Kasem New Zealand, together country, you me one. Long God, you me stand up, brother, my sister, you me one. Long Vanuatu, Kasem New Zealand, together country, you me one. Long God, you me stand up, brother, my sister, you me one. You me build them up Pacific Islands, where them love for unity. You me family,
you me one, you me only, Pacific Islands. You me build them up, Pacific Islands, where them love more unity. You me family, you me one, you me only, Pacific Islands. You me only, Pacific Islands.
That was amazing. Oh my goodness, guys, you brought tears to my eyes. You brought tears to my eyes, you really did. That was just fantastic. Thank you so much. And I feel really blessed. Honestly, I'm welling up here. That was just beautiful and lovely. Thank you. I feel very honoured that you did that for us here at Waiheke Radio. It was such a pleasure to have you guys on. I hope you have a fantastic rest of your trip and have a great rest of the day on Waiheke. Thank you very much.
Waiheke Radio.
It's time to welcome Rhiannon into the show. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
So have you had a good week?
Yes. Yeah, very busy still at the library, but it's been a good week.
Okay. And that's the way you prefer it, isn't
yeah.
it, really?
Yeah,
I know. So tell me, what are you coming in to talk about today?
Oh, I was just going to talk briefly about Music Month. Mm-hmm. We've got our final performance this morning at 11 a.m. Little Sister are coming in. So that's the quartet who are associated with Sister Shout. So they're coming in at 11 a.m. this morning to sing for us, and very excited to have them come. It's going to be wonderful. So do come along to that if you have a chance. And
so that's part of
Music
Sister
Month.
Shout, and it's part of yeah. Is it the last one? Did you say
it's the last Music Month of May? Yeah, and there are four singers from Sister Shout, and this is I think their first performance.
Oh.
Separate from that umbrella. So they often do performances when Sister Shout are performing, but this is the first time they've done one on their own. So that's well worth coming along to. And yeah, Music Month has been incredibly popular. We had over 50 people attend the first one, Doug Jerabine, which was stunningly beautiful Hindustani classical music. And then we had over 70 people attend V12's performance, which was a range of contemporary songs, V12 formed by Pat Ehrlich less than 3 years ago. It was a really beautiful and professional sound, full of good humour and deep feeling. So
they are really good, aren't
yeah.
they? Yeah.
That was great. And then on the 21st, we had Waiheke High's choir, Canto Zola, who gave a really polished performance of a couple of quite tricky songs. So
that's good. Yeah, yeah. I think they've really improved, actually.
Oh,
you can
amazing.
Really see the work that the girls are putting in.
Yeah.
And I've forgotten the choir master's mistress's name. What's
Sarah.
Her?
Yeah,
Sarah.
No, she's very good.
She is really good. She's really got them quite polished, isn't
yep.
she? Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, so as I said, the final one today at 11 a.m. And also I would just wanted to report back on the Writers and Readers Festival.
Oh, yes.
I've spoken to a few people who went, and they all enjoyed the sessions they went to. With my interest in creative writing, I attended three writing workshops, which were offered by the festival, all on the Sunday. So it was sort of 10:30 a.m. through to 4:30 p.m. with a
wow.
couple of 20-minute breaks. So it was really intensive, but a lot of fun. And I got some really valuable advice, so I just wanted to share that for
yeah,
anyone who
great.
Might be interested. So the first workshop I attended was called Brainstorm, and it was a creativity workshop presented by Catherine Burnett, who does a lot of creativity workshops around New Zealand. And it was very much a hands-on two-hour session where she sort of took us through a series of exercises designed to overcome the internal critic and just get past that and just get creative juices flowing and get ideas firing. And it was quite invigorating and dynamic. The ideas probably are available all, you know, from other sources. There's a few books in the library on these kind of exercises as well. And I think some of them had come also from just brainstorming techniques that people use in the business environment.
Oh, interesting.
When they're trying to come up with ideas. And it's the same sort of process that you follow through for coming up with ideas for stories and novels. And she did stress that the what she was doing wasn't the way you would actually write a short story, but it was a sort of, it was very much the brainstorming session before you got going. And she showed us ways in which you can get ideas from the newspaper and how you can play around with things. And yeah, it was really quite fun.
Excellent.
For 2 hours. And then, as I said, I had a 20-minute break and I went straight into another session with Claire Keegan, who's a famous international Irish writer, famous internationally. And she was talking about the essentials of fiction. And it was quite funny, actually, the contrast between the two workshops, because the first one was kind of like, there are no boundaries and there's ideas here and here and here and everywhere, and it's really sort of no restrictions. And then the second one, her first comment was, the key to good fiction is its limitations.
Oh, really?
It was a real difference in style.
Well, it's all about style, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it is, totally. And I thought it was also quite an interesting cultural contrast, a New Zealander and an Irish person. But Claire's workshop was just amazing. It was so full of advice, and
so hers was much more sort of formulaic, was it?
It was much more about what fiction's really about. So she was actually getting down to the real core of fiction, and she actually started off the workshop with, right, what is the core of fiction? What is the key fundamental thing? And everyone was coming up with character or theme or and all these kind of ideas, and she was just going nope.
So what was it then? What did she decide it was?
Time. Absolutely. And she used a really good example. It's about the timing of your story and the time, the specifics of the time for the character. So she gave a really good little idea. She sort of showed us a really boring, dull plot. She said, right, there's this woman, and she gets up, she has breakfast, she goes to work, she comes home, she gets in the door, she can't find the cat, she finds the cat, she looks through the mail, there's a letter she doesn't recognize, she opens it, but it's nothing. And she sits down and she watches television. And the royal wedding's on. And she's got absolutely no interest in the royal family. And she doesn't, she's totally, totally uninterested in all that jazz. But she can't stop watching it. And she keeps watching it. And then she goes to bed. She said, right, okay, that's a terrible plot, right? Okay, timing. This was supposed to be her wedding day.
Ah.
Now it changes everything.
Yes.
And suddenly that is a brilliant plot because it reveals the pathos.
Yes.
So that was very clever, I thought. And so she also argued that we write about the human condition because we don't understand it. So we write to understand. And she said she's very suspicious of any author who tries to be clever. So there's a lot of really good advice going through. It was really sort of get right down to the basics and be very humble as a writer. I did find her advice on the limitations of the art form fascinating, and how it's the limitations that make a story. It's as much about what is left out as about what's put in, which is very true.
Interesting.
And, yeah, she's actually a very popular teacher in Ireland. Her intensive fiction weekends once advertised book out overnight, and I can certainly see why, having been to that workshop. So I hadn't actually read any of her fiction before I went to that workshop, and now I'm really keen to take a look and learn from what she's done. And then my final workshop was with an Australian guy, so it was quite cosmopolitan. So he was called Sean Williams, and he also writes a completely different kind of fiction. He's mostly a science fiction fantasy writer, and he writes across the board for children, teens, and adults. And his workshop was actually called the 10.5 Commandments of Writing.
10.5,
yeah,
I like
quite
that.
Funny.
Yeah.
I know, very funny. And it was really that he has basically created an incredibly successful career as a writer. He's a full-time writer, and he's lived off of his writing for 20 years, and he's done very well at that. And I think he said something like 35 novels published and somewhere in the vicinity of 70-odd short stories.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was probably a couple of years ago, it was that total. And he was just a really nice guy, and he had actually sat down and put quite a lot of thought into how he could advise people who want to be writers how to go about it. And he had come up with these 10 commandments and then sent them out to all of his writing friends, and then someone came back and said, look, I think you've missed something, and that was the point five.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, and it was all excellent advice, and he had tried to make it universal advice, so he'd eliminated anything which didn't apply to everybody.
Right.
He was trying to make sure that he got the things that absolutely applied no matter who you were or what you were writing, and it was all extremely good advice, full of wit and humour. And I have to say that the two really clear messages that came out of it was work hard and enjoy what you do.
Yeah.
And that underlies it.
Yeah. If you don't actually enjoy, I think anything creative, you've got to really have a passion for it.
And absolutely.
It's got to not be dull and boring. You know, it's got to get your creative juices flowing, hasn't
it? Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your writing.
Ah,
put you on the spot now.
Put me on the spot now. I've spent most of my life sort of dabbling with it, and I've spent an awful lot of time struggling with the internal critic. I think one of the things that happened for me was that I was interested in writing, so I did the stupid thing of going off to university and studying how to be a great critic, which
right.
I think happens to quite a lot of people. So I've been on a personal quest, as it were, to deal with that,
right.
and find ways to overcome the critic and actually just give myself permission to get in there and do
yes.
it.
Yes,
which has been very successful over the last few years, and my writing is really taking off now.
Oh, great.
Mm.
And what kind of genre?
Well, my main area of interest is magical realism, but my genre as a writer is kind of verging on the magical realism, but I think I'm particularly fascinated by the idea of there being magic in the ordinary. So that's where I kind of... And my main focus in my stories is the idea of how we change. So it's about how we transform, what the circumstances lead to our transformation as people. So I write short stories, and I'm also working on a novel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And and I've also the other thing that's always been at the back of my mind is the nonfiction as well. So I'm kind of giving myself permission to do everything at the moment.
Oh, good for you.
So yeah, that's been part of it for me. Is you know, I always spent a lot of time going, should I write nonfiction or should I write fiction? Should I write short stories or should I write novels?
Yeah, overanalyzing yourself.
And yeah, exactly. And now I've just gone, hey, whatever comes, and just do it.
Yeah, so, just give yourself that creative freedom.
Freedom, exactly.
See what really works for you.
Yeah,
I do really understand what you said about the whole internal critic thing.
Mm.
Having trained as an actor, I know that even when, now that I've not done it professionally for quite a few years, and I'm happy about that, it's not like I haven't got any angst over it.
Yeah.
But I find that when I go to, not so much when with TV or film, but if I particularly go to the theatre, and my partner is exactly the same, and he trained at the same place. We both sit there and we go, oh, look at the lighting. And it's very interesting how they've got that set. And not sure if I'd have used that music. And
right.
What did you think about that entrance?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, the costumes for that were rather blah, 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 blah. And we sit there. And actually, my mum is the same. She's a shocker.
Right.
She actually does it during the theatre, which is just annoying.
Yeah,
at least we kind of wait until the interval and then afterwards.
Yeah,
but it's that whole sort of... analytical side, which is good in some ways, and I'm sure that that's really helped you sort of create and style where you want to go. But sometimes you just have to switch it off.
Absolutely. I think the key to writing is that your recognition that you have the creative side of the brain and you have the critical side of the brain, and when you're writing something for the first time, you want the critic switched off completely and just have the creative side engaged, and then you just let that flow. And then when you reach the point where you're wanting to edit, then the critic is your friend.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they can't come in before then, because if they do, they'll destroy the creativity.
Oh, well, Yes, I agree. But how very, very interesting. Mm. So, did you manage to get to see any of the readings?
No, I as I said, because my interest was in getting
in the
some,
writing
yeah,
side, yeah.
I went exclusively to those sessions. But I, as I said, I have spoken to a few people who went to some of the readings as well, and they really enjoyed them. It's a fantastic festival. We're so lucky to have it.
We are incredibly lucky, and I feel terribly guilty that I didn't manage to get there this year at all. But maybe next is it yearly? Isn't it
is. It? Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is yearly.
Yeah.
Actually,
so
yeah.
Hopefully next year I'll be able to get along and see some more stuff, because I just think we are very privileged here on Waiheke to have so many festivals and international performers prepared to come over and see us and talk to us and show us what they're all about or perform. You know, we do get some great people over.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And hope you have a successful rest of the day. And so Little Sister is on at what time?
Just 11 a.m.
They're on at 11. So if you're on your way into Oniroa and you fancy popping down, I think it will be well worth it, because they are really good.
You've been listening to the interviews from last week's Island Life. Island Life is Waiheke Radio's weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. We bring it to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with the interviews replayed on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. or they're available as a podcast at www.waihekeradio.org.nz.